everybody, to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Eric Horn, here with Maddie Lee at the Oklahoman Studios in Oklahoma City, downtown. And we are joined today by a very special guest, Mr. Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle. Jonathan, thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining us so soon off of vacation. Didn't you just get back from vacation?
I did. I'm like rested and sort of tanned and not ready to go.
Perfect. Exactly what we wanted for this.
Where did you go?
I went to Vancouver and then Victoria and a little bit of Seattle too.
Great, just great the way choice. Back. Great choice. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Cities.
Well, I love Vancouver and I miss it desperately from the old Grizzlies days. And, you know, I got to do stuff I never did when I was there for work, you know, climbing mountains and hiking around. And it's a pretty great place.
Jonathan,
and cool, which I bet it's not even in the fabulous Oklahoma City studios.
No.
Oh, my goodness. This week has been...
It's pretty warm here.
Although, as we heard from Westbrook, it's hot as hell in Houston.
Yeah?
Yep. Yeah. And you know what's funny? He said he came in sometime before the press conference, and it really was like it is now. We're going to maybe set records this week. But the day he said it, we were actually in a strange cool front for about 2-3 days, and we all looked at each other like, uh-oh.
It's going to be a long summer for him.
And we'll get into the whole press conference in which you played a big part. But the best part of that press conference to me was Daryl cutting in after he said that and quickly going into quickly,
free agents.
Free agents. Most of the year, Daryl's like, well, actually, he had to step in front of Russell on that one and kind of just to let free agents know it's not that bad all the time.
You'll be here in the winter. It's 70. It's fine.
I don't know what Daryl was selling in that particular instance, but last time I checked, it was pretty humid in Houston all the time.
Well, no, the winter can be amazing. And there's days, you know, we get back from a road trip and, you know, you come in from Chicago and it's just perfect here. And you know what he did. It was reflex from having said it so many times.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's probably done that in so many conversations with free agents. It came out real easy because it is true. During the season, when we don't have the humidity, it really is pretty great. And I know it because I like what we do. I get to visit winter. I get my four seasons without having to live in four seasons. So I never shovel it. I never drive in it. But I go up to Minneapolis and I'll go throw some snowballs at something and then get back on the plane and come back here. So I know he said that out of habit.
Yeah, the whole summer has just been interesting. You know, even when it's supposedly downtime, we're just getting these press conferences that are just all kinds of fascinating, whether it's the Paul George press conference in Los Angeles or it's Russell being introduced in Houston and holding that Red Rockets jersey. And it's just like you kind of got to take a double take. You're like, because, Jonathan, you've been covering him longer than even I have, or you've been – I'm not covering, but watching Russell Westbrook play longer than I have. It's just kind of alarming. And what was that scene like for you that day in Houston when Russell's introduced?
Well, he was, as you saw, tremendously enthusiastic and sort of cheerful and cooperative. And I visited with him a little bit after the press conference and after some of the social media stops he did for the Rockets organization and photo shoot and all that. And you could tell by then he was getting a little tired, you know, a lot of talking and a lot of go here now, hurry, go
Russell's
here,
tired of media?
No.
Well, it wasn't just media, though, because it was sort of the team needs, too. By the time I got to him alone for a little while, you know, it was the photos for the team. And I think he might have done one sit-down with media with their flagship station besides the press conference. And then, you know, social media. So look in the camera and say this isn't really media, or, you know, say, hi, Rocket fans. Oh, hi, Rocket fans. You know, so right. That kind of thing. But he was still cheerful. And, you know, we talked about for a couple minutes of times he might have had a championship chance as good a championship chance as he might have now that he has had in his career. And you could tell he like lit up. So he was very enthusiastic about everything, kind of excited about a fresh start. He enjoyed it. James Harden came to the press conference, sat in the front row. They kidded with one another a little bit. James, in fact, threw those things after the press conference, sort of followed him around. Like, you know, the way we see security details follow some players around wherever they go. There's James Harden going to the photo shoot and James Harden going to the locker room. You know, it's like, what are you doing? So he was in a really good mood, I think was the thing that sort of struck us all. It wasn't as if he was a free agent, but in a lot of ways, this is his choice. It was as if he was a free agent, kind of like Chris Paul when he got here. Chris Paul was also traded here, but it was not an arranged marriage. This is something that, in both cases, they wanted.
Now, that's a good segue, because, you know, all summer we've read a lot of things about the relationship between Chris Paul and James Harden. Throughout the season, the postseason, you know, we've read and heard things about the contract that Chris Paul was under, and you can speak to this better than anybody about Tillman and how he feels about Chris Paul's contract, how he felt about it. So, how much of this deal do you think is, you know, Daryl seeing this as an opportunity to get a player of Russell's caliber, and how much of it do you think is the relationship between James Harden and Chris Paul had reached a point where these guys needed something new, or is it something completely different that hasn't been explored yet? Like, what do you think is the crux of this deal getting done from the Rockets' perspective?
In a lot of ways, it's not any of those. To a degree, it might be. It gives them a better chance that they feel that Russ, it's just a better player at this stage than Chris. But more than that, it's sort of increasing the James Harden window, that Chris is going to fall off, assuming both stay healthy, Chris is going to fall off sooner than Russ will because he's 4 years older. And so it just keeps that window open longer. And in a lot of ways, if you're going to pay either one of these guys what they're going to be paid for as long as they're going to be paid, keep that championship window open longer makes a lot of sense. Since they didn't get the championship in the first 2 years with Chris, particularly that first year, the 65-win year, to keep the window open is a big motivation. I think in a lot of ways with Tillman, it wasn't as much or just about the contract as it was that it wasn't his choice. That he, even though it was signed after he bought the team a year later, and even though they probably would have done it because they had come off the 65-win season, he felt in a lot of ways it was an understanding, even if whatever degree of unspoken understanding, that it was part of the deal to have come here in the first place with the previous owner, Leslie Alexander. And I don't think he liked having no choice. You know, it didn't feel like it was his decision. He might have made the exact same decision, or at least the same amount, had he started fresh, or if Chris was a Clippers free agent, as opposed to 1 year into his Rockets time. I think that always bothered Tillman, that he felt like he didn't have any choice in that. But, you know, I think he'd have gone on. I think he liked Chris personally. The James-Chris dynamic, it was a weird thing because the reports, they had a confrontation in Game 6. And we all thought, yeah, what else is new? You know, that nobody ever denied that they did. That's just sort of the dynamic with this team. It happened all the time, not just with them. P.J. Tucker said, and a lot of people argued, nah, yeah, get out of here. And it was totally true. Hey, I got on them way more than they got on each other. If anybody is sort of confronting somebody, it's me. And that's totally true. I did a story about that in the middle of one of the winning streaks in the first season. I think it was the 14-game winning streak that, you know, P.J. on the court, getting in Chris's face and screaming at him. And they spoke about how, yeah, they want to communicate. That Chris believes in that, and James has sort of embraced that. Say it. Don't just think it behind the other guy's back. So they do all the time. They would have come back and been okay with one another, and they would have had more confrontations too. And it's just how they relate with this team. And Mike D'Antoni encourages that. He's not a guy who says, I'm the only voice. He really expects players to take ownership and be accountable to one another. The Rockets considered that a strength, not a problem. If James had a problem with Chris, I think it was that he wasn't as good as he used to be, that he would have liked Chris to be better at basketball. And Chris is still really good in a lot of ways that got overlooked a little bit because of what he didn't do in his second season, sort of obscured some of the things he was still doing well and some of the games he had that were really good games. But if they had an issue, I think it was James didn't view him as sort of the ultimate running mate that he did think he was that first year. You know, Paul George playing with Kawhi or Anthony Davis with LeBron. He didn't view him that way, and he did sort of view and still views Russ that way, but I don't think it was because of the confrontations. That was just, you know, hey, it was a Tuesday, what else is new?
Well, yeah, go ahead,
Maddie. It's been interesting watching from a national perspective, because like you said, those confrontations blew up, they were all over, and a lot of people didn't have the background that you're explaining and that you had. And so this narrative that has existed about Chris being a bad locker room guy kind of got carried on. How do you see him as an influence behind the scenes and in the locker room, just in general, and taken out of Houston?
But, you know, it reminds me a little bit of something Phil Jackson said about Kobe, that he said it after, I think it was a sweep of Orlando, the year they won that finals. And it was the first one without Shaq. And he said, Kobe's a great teammate, great leader, but only for certain types of guys. We have to be cognizant of who fits with Kobe. And Kobe can be rougher than Chris. But it's kind of that same mindset that Phil Jackson was describing. With P.J. Tucker, with a lot of guys, Chris is a great leader and a great guy to have in the locker room. Other guys probably wouldn't appreciate that. That he is going to be demanding. He's going to get on you. And he's open to you getting on him, too. That's part of it. But it probably wouldn't be great for every guy. But it is significant that Austin Rivers chose to come here. He had other places to go. And, you know, they were supposedly two that don't get along. Well, he's now signed as a free agent twice to come here. Because he re-signed here before they traded Chris. And then, of course, the first time he signed here, we know DeAndre Jordan would happily, it didn't work out. He's happy in New York. He was able to, you know, join a really good team just by switching boroughs. But he would happily play again with Chris. We know J.J. Redick would happily play with Chris. So people who've never been his teammates say it's terrible to be his teammate. People who have been his teammates seem to choose to do it again. But I do think there might be some that just don't want it, that rather sort of enjoy the life rather than be as demanding and driven as he is.
It's funny that you phrase it that way, that, you know, people who play with him, you know, speak and vouch for Chris, and then, you know, you've got a group of people or pundits that say that, like, people don't want to play with Chris Paul, or they don't want to, you know, be on the same team as him. Like, that's kind of what the narrative was about Russell Westbrook for a while. Like, every time you talk to a guy who played with Russell Westbrook, they'd stand by him and say he's a great teammate. You know, whether they were in Oklahoma City or they were somewhere else, they'd always vouch for Russell Westbrook. The same with coaches. But then you get this narrative that guys don't want to play with Russell Westbrook when, you know, Paul George leaves or Kevin Durant leaves, or guys get better when they get away from Russell Westbrook. So it's interesting to me to see how these guys in their, you know, kind of the narrative is going to change or remain the same with their new teams. Like, what's the narrative going to be for Chris Paul here in Oklahoma City? Obviously,
you know, how long will that last?
How long is he going to be here is the big question. You know, I don't think that this was a first destination for Chris. He's obviously making the most of it, and you know, he's posted that he's excited to be here and come and be a part of it. But this is an opportunity for Chris to kind of do some damage control. It's an opportunity for Russell to get back to the level that he was playing at, closer to his MVP level. And I think the biggest thing for Russell more than anything is the play situation, because you know, while he put up triple-double numbers last year, and Jonathan, you asked James Harden about this in the press conference, one of the first questions, or not James Harden, Russell Westbrook about this in the press conference, the fit, that's what people have more of a question about with Russell Westbrook than anything, is the fit with James Harden and with Mike D'Antoni. Like how do you see that working out? And obviously you haven't seen them play together yet, but you obviously have some of the same questions that we do and other people do about Russell Westbrook and how his fit is going to work with a guy who's as ball dominant as James.
Well, yeah, there's the two parts of that. Going to his answer to that question, he said there's more ways I can contribute than just playing off the ball scoring.
Which he said in Oklahoma City several times, by the way, Jonathan. I'm sure you're aware of this, but he said that many, many times in Oklahoma City, which isn't false. And he does contribute in a lot of areas.
And he contributes in those other areas, which were Rockets' shortcomings. You know, the Rockets' most consistent weakness was defensive rebounding. They never solved that last year. They got good. When they got healthy, they got good defensively. You know, I saw somebody write this week about them ranking 17th. Well, yeah, but what were they when they didn't have two or three starters out? You take two or three starters out, yeah they weren't very good. But when they were healthy, they were good. They were the, I think, the number two ranked defense in the league after the All-Star break when Chris and Clint Capella came back. Defensive rebounding, however, they were terrible all year. Never got better. And it was a problem even in the playoffs that they never solved. Well, Russ is maybe the best defensive rebounding guard, or at least point guard, ever. And they weren't athletic. Well, Russ is pretty athletic if he's healthy. You know, he is an athletic guy, and they were not fast. They were not athletic. So there, some of the things he can bring, they lacked. But the fit is, you know, games lost and won in those last five half-court possessions. So how will he fit? To me, it's going to have to be either some combination of James being more effective, more active as a catch-and-shoot threat. He would seem to have the skills to do that. Or Chris being able to attack off the bounce when James is the playmaker. And we saw lots of clips of that when they were together with the Thunder, where James might handle, or they'd even go like a pick-and-roll, and Collison or somebody would get it in a pick-and-pop situation, but then give it to Russ on the weak side, and he would attack off the dribble. If they can do either of those things, the fact that Russ is not a catch-and-shoot three-point threat, not a consistent, reliable shooter in those situations, they can still make that work. But that's going to be how they do it. It's going to have to be him attacking off the dribble when the defense is shifted because of James pick-and-roll, or James being a catch-and-shoot guy that he has not been so far.
Yeah, and that's the big question I have about these guys fitting together is, you know, when you talk about it, it would seem to be you maximize these guys by putting Russ more on the ball than James and having James be the catch-and-shoot guy. But we're coming off of two seasons where James has been the best isolation player that we've arguably ever seen in the entire league. Like, you know, whether it's creating for other guys in isolation or being able to get points himself per possession in isolation. So to me, it begs the question of you're taking the ball out of the hands of one of the most destructive offensive players we've ever seen in terms of one-on-one play. You're negating that lethal step back. You're taking a few of those possessions away a game. Now, you can also stagger the lineups the way that D'Antoni did with Chris Paul and James Harden, and you can do it in extremes with Russell and James, and those guys are just going to have to figure that out. But you're going to have those guys closing games together. So it's just going to be interesting to see how much James is willing to take a step back in terms of the control and how much Russell's able to take a step back when those two are playing together.
Right, and those are the two different things. The stagger will happen for sure. One of those guys will be the point guard at all times. And so when James is sitting, they should be able to be much more up-tempo with Russ rebounding. And boy, he will rebound with that second unit because somebody's got to. And, you know, that's what they used to say with the Thunder. And okay, you get a break. Well, that second unit, which has two starters in it often, Eric Gordon and P.J. Tucker, along with, assuming Eric continues to start, along with Daniel House, that group needs to run more. They need to run a lot more. And you can still now have the vertical pick-and-roll threat in the half court with Tyson Chandler that they lacked last year, playing Nene or going small or whatever they did. So that could fit very well when James is sitting. They need to be much more up-tempo, or at least more often up-tempo. But you know, when you finish games, they're on the court together, and most possessions are in the half court. A lot of it goes to what Mike D'Antoni said a lot when people were asking about how do Chris and James fit together after that trade, and that was asked all the time then. And Chris was a much better catch-and-shoot three-point shooter than Russ, but people still asked a lot. And he said the reason it will work is because they want it to work. They want it bad. This was their choice. And that's every bit as true now. They want it. They're very talented people who want it badly. D'Antoni's confidence is they'll figure it out because they have so much talent and they want it bad. And we'll see if he's right, but that's what he thinks is the most important factor to making it work.
Defensively, I mean, we talked about defensive rebounds. Obviously, Russ is great at that, but we've all seen him take possessions off or lose his guy when he's off ball. What do you expect from swapping him out for Chris on the defensive end?
It's different, and that is very true what you described, and it's also a description of James. That James is better than people think defensively because he's so good as a post-up defender, one of the best in the league. And because the Rockets switch so much, he gets people post him up a lot, and his numbers are fantastic. Well, one of those, you know, somehow that does fit him athletically better. He's unusually strong, but he's not great against the super quick guys. But it also works out that way, I think, because when it's a post-up situation, he's engaged. Mm-hmm. He's on his guy. He doesn't get sort of lost. And the Rockets think that will happen with Russ as well, that he's actually pretty good when he's engaged. It's him against his guy. It's when he loses his guy, you know, somebody moving without the ball, that kind of thing. Not involved, not handling the ball himself. He's going to have to be engaged more to be a really good defensive player. And Chris was real good about taking advantage of those times to get deflections and touches and things like that. He's going to have to be engaged more. Maybe the Rockets switching style brings that out of him more. The question I have is, okay, but the Rockets struggled when the Warriors went to the full Warrior thing, when Durant was out. You know, in some ways they defended better with the sort of less nonstop movement that would happen with Durant on the floor. But when they went to the full Warriors, that's when the Rockets got eliminated this year. Well, that doesn't fit Russ defensively, and it doesn't fit James very well defensively. It's when they're both on their guy, and their guy is challenging them, that they rise to a challenge. That's what I think we need to see out of Russ. And we also need to see when he doesn't have to carry the load that he carried in Oklahoma City, because he has James again, and he's got a very different James than he played with. Is he engaged defensively more often because he doesn't have to do everything on the other end as he did these last couple of years in OKC?
Yeah, I think that's the real big question defensively, because those guys do seem to have some redundancies there. You know, Russell actually did some of his best work last year when he was guarding James. He took that challenge, and I don't know how having both of those guys on the floor who have to be particularly engaged on, you know, one-on-one challenges is going to help the Rockets' defense that, that struggled for a good bit of last year. And not to mention that you're losing Benzelic again. We talked a lot of Rockets, but this is pertinent stuff. I mean, this is Westbrook, and these are all the questions that people have about this Westbrook kind of Harden relationship working out. I still think that the Rockets are going to be a good team. I don't know if they're going to be able to reach the heights that Chris Paul and James Harden did when they were healthy, but you know, Russell's a good pick and roll player. He's going to be able to throw the pick and roll lob to Clint Capella the same way he did with Steven Adams. They're gonna give teams some problems. Not just because they're really good players, but they just create mismatches too because of their size and their skill level. So, you know, the Rockets can be a 50-win team for sure. Jonathan, what do you think is the ultimate outcome for them in terms of seeding? You know, how many games they're going to win? I know it's really early to say that stuff. We can go around the table and just spot off where we think they are. I'll start. I think the Rockets are going to be a 50-win team. I think they're going to hit exactly 50 wins because the West is deep. And they were, what, 53 last year? I think they were at 53 last year, and that was with injuries. But Russ is going to play somewhere between 75 or 72 to 80 games. I think he played like, what was it, like 72 last year or something like that?
Ooh, I don't know off the top of my head.
I think he missed nine. I think he missed nine.
Because he had the ankle and the knee.
So like,
and the kids.
And the kids. Let's say he misses 8 to 10 games just because he played 73. Let's say he misses 8 to 10, just age, little stuff here and there. Maybe the Rockets rest him. Good luck getting Russell to rest. But I'm going to go 50, just a flat 50 wins. The West is just a monster. They might not get to 50, but I'll just go ahead and give them the benefit of the doubt of 50 wins.
Yeah, I'd give them more than that because not many more. But they won 53 last year with Clint Capella going out for like a month, you know, maybe more. Yeah, definitely more, like 2 months, actually. Eric Gordon going out, Chris Paul going out for a long time. They had a tremendous, and then their little contract stalemate with Daniel House, which really mattered. They were so thin at those positions that he might as well have been injured for 2 months. That was unusual, and they won 53. The West is deeper. It's better. But I still think the 53 to 55 win range is a good number for them. And seeding, who knows, you know, because you can go from second to seventh based on a game.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the West is so good. Just like 2 years ago, well, even last year, the Rockets were seeded fourth, tied for the third best record, one game out of second and two out of seventh. So, you know, just seeding. And anybody who tells you they have a good guess there, that's, you can't guess. That's, you know, I know this coin is going to land on heads. Yeah, well, how do you know? You don't. But I think 53, 54 sounds about right for them.
I'll split. I was going to say exactly 53 again, but I'll go 52, split the difference. Because I think, I mean, even though the West is deeper and you have teams like the Clippers and the Lakers who have gotten much better, you also have teams like the Warriors and the Thunder who are going to give games back. So I think staying right around that 53 mark sounds about right.
I'll stick with the 50. I think that a healthy Clippers is probably the top of the league, the top of the West. Denver will probably be over 50 wins again. You know, you would project Utah there, but for some reason Utah tends to kind of slip a little when it comes to the regular season. They'll get a guy injured here and there. They've got more cover now. They've got, you know, Bogdanovich and, you know, Jeff Green and some guys that are quality that signed as free agents, Mike Conley. But I'd probably say I'd put Utah ahead of Houston right now. And those are my three for sure. Everybody else, I don't know what's going to happen with the Lakers. You would think the Lakers can be a 50-win team. But you get LeBron or Anthony Davis hurt for any stretch of time, and it changes really quickly. But I think the three teams for sure that I would say I'd pick over the Rockets right now would be the Clippers, Utah, and Denver. And that's really it.
Denver.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Rockets are more unpredictable than some of those teams. Certainly Utah and Denver, maybe, as regular season records go, because they're thinner. So if they have injuries, it should affect them more, or even load management days, should affect them more than some of those teams that are deeper. I do think Denver, I picked them to have the best regular season record of the West, because they don't have the continuity issues. They don't have to adjust to changes.
Right. They're so consistent last season.
Yeah. They're so deep. And the Clippers, you know, there's going to be some load management time. They do have to do some adjusting. Paul is coming off injuries and surgeries and things. Just build. They could be the favorite once you get to the postseason. But regular season, I think Denver and Utah are built to build records.
Jonathan, we haven't talked a lot about the Thunder because the Westbrook-Harden, you know, kind of combination is just so mouthwatering and what people really want to know about. But you know, people are obviously expecting the Thunder to take a step back. What do you anticipate, you know, presuming that Chris Paul is going to be here on opening night? We don't know how long Chris Paul will be here. We don't know if it'll be a year-long thing, if they'll come to a deal sometime before the deadline, you know, once December 15th hits and more teams can get into the trade market for him. We don't even know if there's something can get pulled off before preseason. But of all the indications point to Chris Paul starting the season with the Thunder. Like, how do you anticipate him coming in here to a team that's got some younger pieces that has essentially said we're trying to, as the Thunder says, as Sam Presti says, reposition and replenish.
Before
rebuilding because he refuses to use the word rebuild when it comes to this. And look, frankly, you can't rebuild if you have a Chris Paul on your team. That's not part of the rebuild. That kind of is a bridge to it. But how do you anticipate that looking, Jonathan, considering that we haven't seen him play with these guys, obviously? What's Chris Paul like at this stage in his career? How do you feel like he fits with some of the stuff that the Thunder has to offer?
I think he's going to be really good. And I think he's very determined. The thing he doesn't do, or at least last year he did not do very well, that he did the year before, was just one-on-one ISO beat a guy on a switch.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Can beat anybody.
Yeah, he was awesome off the dribble last year. Just unbelievable. Yeah, the year, I guess it was the 65 win year, his first year.
Right.
He was just awesome.
But even then, it was off switches. They would force, you know, Myers Leonard to switch on him,
yeah,
and he would just burn him. Last year, he couldn't do that. While James beats anybody, Chris would do it off a switch. He doesn't do that, or at least he didn't last year. But with the Thunder, I don't think they're going to ask him to do that. I think it's more, Steven Adams is going to set screens. I think he fairly quickly will develop a real rapport, a chemistry with him, to where they're effective. I think he's going to be really good. I think he's more determined than he's been. Well, he's always been determined, but he's at least as determined as ever. And he's had a healthy summer. Well, last year was a rehab summer after the hamstring injury. This is a healthy summer. The other thing, last year he shot badly. And it made no sense. He's always been a good three-point shooter, a good catch-and-shoot guy. That is something that should age well. It's why the Rockets were confident in giving him the contract, is they thought, well, playing next to James, he's going to catch and shoot, and that can age well. You know, that he doesn't jump anyway, so you're not going to lose anything there. I think that comes back. I think he knocks down the shots that he just never really consistently made, or reliably made throughout the year last year. I think he's going to do well playing with another ball-handling guard, as he did here. The way Sam Presti is putting it makes a lot of sense because of the haul of draft picks and because they're not a championship contender as they were going into previous seasons, or at least, you know, since acquiring Paul George. And then, of course, going back to the KD years. So he doesn't want people to expect that, and I wouldn't expect that. But I think they're going to be better than people think because Chris is going to be better than people think.
You mentioned playing with another ball-handling guard. What do you think could be the best thing that he could pass down or have rub off on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander?
Well, I don't know him well enough to know, does he need the influence of this incredible worker that Chris is? You know, sure. Chris is so dedicated. I mean, his pregame work, his postgame, every night after the game, and it's the discipline of it never varies. He never takes a day or, you know, that, but that is valuable to a young player to see, that a Hall of Famer has this attitude. But whether he needs to see that or already have, I don't know. But that you get. You know, the understanding, and Chris knows the other team's offense better than they do. You know, he, or defense, what they're trying to do to defend. He's such a smart player that having him in his ear, assuming that he's able to sort of take all that and not, you know, fill the wall, that, oh my gosh, he's talking at me again. If you can, if you want that, boy, you know, that's so valuable. But I don't know the young guy's personality well enough to know. You know, you guys will see that, though, very quickly, because, you know, Chris never stops. He's always talking. You know, he sees everything. He's. I tell you, the other thing is, I really liked covering Chris.
Awesome.
But the thing that it's also frustrating in a way, because the best stuff is just off the record. That, you know, post game, he'd do his interview and the scrum, and you talk, and then everybody walk away, and we'd talk. We'd talk about the game. And it's really fun, and I learn things, and, you know, I argued a little when I disagreed, you know, just, you know, he knew that I've been doing this for a while. I really enjoyed that. It was just really good, and he sees everything, you know, that's cool, too. It's kind of coaches. When I started on this beat, you know, all those years ago, it's the thing I noticed is that the coaches see everything. Well, he's like that. You know, what every guy is doing, what they were trying to do, what they tried to run, why it didn't work, why it worked, you know, what this official saw when he made this call, what he thought he saw but didn't, you know, that's Chris. And if you love basketball, and like I, as this podcast probably shows, I can talk about basketball all day. Chris is that way too. Chris, every night, he's got multiple, whether it's television screens, computer, phone, whatever it is, he's watching multiple games every night. Hmm. So the next day, you can say, hey, what'd you think of that fourth quarter in Minnesota? And it'll pass. You know, it's got something to talk about.
Amazing.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, there was one night in Memphis, he asked if I watched, and I said, well, I had that one on the computer, but I had this one on the television, so I kind of was watching more of that one. And he thought that was funny, that he found somebody who's as nuts as he is.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, Steven Adams talked this year about how Chris is so good at disrupting the Thunder's pick and roll coverage just because he has such a good feel for being able to get that big to hold a little longer than he wants to. And as we saw, that can really mess the Thunder up.
Yeah,
That was a thing he did the Clipper years. It was one of my favorite things to watch, was the way he did that in pick and roll, especially in the Clipper years, where he would just torture the big man that knows that lob is coming if he doesn't get deep quick, but Chris isn't letting him. It was one of the best things to watch in the league. If you, you know, really can see it, the way Chris would do that to a pick and roll coverage. But especially, I thought, in the Clippers' years.
Yeah. Steven will be happy to be on the other side of that for at least a while.
Quick Chris Paul stats I just looked up. Last season, on catch-and-shoot threes, he was 43.1%. Season before, 41.1%. Both very good numbers. Pull-up threes. Here's the difference here. And pull-up twos as well. Last season, 34.5%. The season before, his first season with the Rockets, where they won 65 games, Chris Paul hit 38.1% of his pull-up threes. Like, that's ridiculous. I think he and Harden were both, like, in the 38% range on pull-ups that first year. It's just absurd. Pull-up twos last year, 47.9%. 17-18, his first year with the Rockets, 52.7% on pull-ups. He hit 136 out of 258. I mean, if he could get back anywhere in that range or closer to that than he was in last year. And last year he wasn't horrendous. I mean, if you go look at Russell's pull-up numbers, it would probably be something just ghastly. But if Chris Paul can get closer to that Rockets first year, he's going to have a bounce-back season. And, you know, like you were saying, Jonathan, not having to rehab, coming off and being healthy, going into a season, that's a sign for optimism that Chris Paul can get closer to those numbers.
Right, and, you know, he was able to be very effective next to James, but he's still Chris Paul. Put the ball in his hands. You know, yeah. that will happen. Even though he does play with another guy now who should have the ball in his hands, they'll stagger them too. And you put the ball in his hands. Let him run. And I think in some ways, I think Billy Donovan will get more credit for running the kind of offense that they're going to run, to where I sometimes think he's not appreciated enough because of other factors, you know, the success that was expected, the success they had before him, you know, they were a finals team. I think he might, I don't know if I'm going to go as far as saying Doc Rivers of last season will be Billy Donovan next season, because Doc has sort of the credibility that comes with a championship in his past, and the Clippers were so overlooked. But
well, Billy's basically coaching the Clippers from last year now, so I mean, it's right. He's kind of like Doc Rivers now in a sense that he's got L.A., Oklahoma now. I mean, he's got Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and Danilo Gallinari, Chris Paul. He's basically coaching like the Clippers, a combination of Clippers, from the past 5 years. So
he doesn't have Lou Williams though.
No,
he
doesn't
have Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell off the bench. But yeah, if they're a 7th-8th seed and they win a couple of playoff games, do people appreciate him the way they did Doc?
No, it's possible, and I don't think they're going to make the playoffs because the West is just a monster, but I think there will be a better appreciation for him because and this is going to be a challenge for Mike D'Antoni, because I just don't think that Russell Westbrook's particularly easy to coach, whether it's a playing style or, you know, just his personality and just his the gravity he has over a team. I just don't think that Russell Westbrook's a particularly easy guy to coach. Not that he's a detriment to your team, because you can still win a ton of games with Russell Westbrook. The Thunder never won fewer than 45 games in the past 10 years with Russell Westbrook on the team. But I think that's a challenge that will remain to be seen with Mike D'Antoni, how he maximizes Russell Westbrook, how they get along. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how Chris Paul and Billy Donovan get along, because Chris Paul is a strong, headstrong personality too. And whether or not both of those guys can maximize their new point guards, I think is going to be one of the key points of the season throughout the NBA.
Yeah, do you do it here with an expectation that you're a championship contender? You know, that's the bar. They're expected to at least be among the contenders.
With D'Antoni going into the final year of his deal.
Yeah.
Presumably. I still want to see if they won more. I don't know. The agent insists, nope, this will be it, last year. But I just got to think they take one more run at see if they can come up with something. But if not, yeah. And the owner's quote to me is that lame duck is a media invention. Well, that makes no sense. No,
it's an owner's invention, because he's the one who controls whether or not the guy has a contract. Like,
right, but he makes it like that's a term only the media pays attention to. Well, no, I think most coaches know when they're in the last year of their contract.
Most of their assistant coaches know when the head coach is in the last year of their contract.
All of their agents know when they're in the last year of their contract. Warren Legarry knows perfectly well that Mike D'Antoni is in the last year of his contract. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think like Mike walked out, you know, one morning in his slippers and bathrobe and picked up the Houston Chronicle on his front lawn and
I'm in the last. What? When did this happen?
You know, waved to James Harden while he was picking up his Chronicle in his slippers and bathrobe. You know, I don't picture that scene happening.
Jonathan, you're definitely a realist. Yeah, because that does seem far-fetched to me that James Harden and Mike D'Antoni would be walking out And first of all, that they live in the same neighborhood. Do they live in the in the same neighborhood? Are they neighbors?
This
they
is
do
just,
not.
It sounds okay. like a State Farm commercial, although.
Well, and as if they did live in the same neighborhood, as if you can even see one driveway from the other.
Yeah.
Because I feel like right. James's driveway is really far away from the next one.
Yeah. It's like Mike D'Antoni's like texting James, did you see the front page of the Chronicle? And James is like, yeah, I just picked it up with my coffee. Like, no, that's not happening. Like, I just can't you imagine know? James Harden picking up a newspaper, like a physical. Maybe he does. Maybe James Harden is just this guy who just loves to read newspapers. I don't
He's
know.
Like, the more hidden Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
Klay does, but I have never, James has never commented on anything I've written. He's I've had some conversations, real brief ones that he would have had a chance to if that was something he was into. Back in the day, players did all the time. There was one I tell all the time, Bonzi Wells answered, to 9 straight questions I asked once in New Orleans. And I quoted them all. You know, that, I ran 9 it's times.
It's amazing.
He calls me over in Memphis. He had read it. He said, what you did? All right, that was pretty cool. So players did used to read. And not that long ago, read the paper. The print, you know, they used to have it in the Rockets team room, you know, whatever they call the players lounge, and they just have them laying around and they'd sit and grab a paper. It wasn't quite my description of them walking out to their front lawn, but they did read them all the time. Now, it's like we've all seen in our business is if they might still read it. I think obviously, a lot of people do, but a lot of players might read online, on their phone, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, walking out to the front lawn, unfortunately, I don't know if they do that anymore.
Yeah, I don't know if they're doing that. I think these guys still read. It might not be as much as they used to.
And some of them read a lot more than they let on.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly.
Of course, nobody tells them. Yeah. This is what they wrote about you today.
Yeah, in as many words. And they probably leave out, not probably, they totally leave out context. But yeah, these guys, somebody's reading for them. Somebody's telling them what's being written about them. Or some of them just read and they just don't tell you that they read. It's like Russell Westbrook saying that he doesn't pay attention to what people are saying. No, you do pay attention to what people are saying, Russell, because you put people in timeout. So good luck with that, Jonathan.
James doesn't. James does not. James, he is completely, he does not care at all if you criticize him or if you praise him. He's just, I've had so many different people tell me that he just does not care, praise too. You know, somebody writes something that he's the greatest thing ever. Yeah, yeah, whatever. I've been told this so many times by people around James, people around the organization, that he just does not care about that kind of thing. He's been trained well because he's obviously a lightning rod of many, many opinions and a lot of criticism, but he was fairly immune to it.
Last one, and then we'll let you go.
Oh, I got another one.
Last two, and then we'll let you go. Go ahead, Maddie, you go first.
I've got a good segue for this, too. Speaking of reading, Jonathan, you had a great piece on Texas Sports Nation, so everyone who hasn't read that, go check it out. It's a Houston Chronicle website, sports-specific website. But on the 6 days that led up to the Russell Westbrook trade, I'm not going to make you recap the whole thing, but from your reporting on that, what stood out to you the most?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what stood out to me the most. I enjoyed the thing I used at the end, as soon as I heard that story, it's what I liked the most, was that some part of the process, James asking Daryl Morey, why is this taking so long? The process of trading for Russell Westbrook. And Daryl's answer was, dude, it took me 5 months to trade for you.
So good.
And I liked it on so many levels that I like that he called him dude. That was great. And Daryl at one point talked about he did talk to Chris in the very beginning of the 6-day stretch from the Paul George trade to the Russell Westbrook trade that, yeah, we're going to try and talk to Oklahoma City that could involve you. And so he told him in the beginning, but then when it happened and he had to call and tell him again how hard that was to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were not, you know, despite what you might hear, they were not just trying to trade Chris Paul. They were working with Chris Paul about free agents and other things, all about next season. They were optimistic about next season with Chris Paul. So then to have to go back and say, yeah, we traded you, that was really hard. And it was when they were looking to get Jimmy Butler in free agency, they told Eric Gordon and Clint Capella, you might get traded if this happens. So they were upfront with guys, which is interesting, but that is how Daryl does things. He likes guys to feel informed about things. And so he
better to hear it from him than see it on Twitter.
Yeah, a little bit. And that's why when you saw reports that PJ Tucker, that was not right. They were not looking to move him. But anyway, with those two, they did tell them, and he did tell Chris, we're not looking to trade you. No, you're going to be here. So then when he had to go back and say, look, this, you know, Oklahoma City traded Paul George, we are looking to talk to them about Russell Westbrook, and then you could be involved. And then 5-6 days later, he had to call and tell him, yeah, we traded you. And he said, that was one of the hardest ones I've ever had to do. That was an interesting part of it, I thought. The whole thing, though, the mechanics of a trade coming together that quickly. One thing I didn't have in that story, because I was writing about myself, so I didn't do that, but I get to Vegas. So the trade happens on Thursday. Tuesday, I'm hearing the words almost impossible. And from sources, that's how it was described. Almost impossible that it would happen. And so I asked Darryl about it after the trade, and he said, yeah, around that time we thought, nope, not going to happen. Needs a 3-team deal. We can't get a 3-team deal. It's not going to happen. He said, I told Tillman and Patrick Fertitta, nah, doesn't look like it's going to happen, because that's what I thought. And that was around Tuesday. Thursday, an hour before the trade, and the trade came together the last stretch very quickly, about an hour before, I had a couple people, I don't know what their titles are, but basically GMs, I don't think that's their title, but that level, say, nah, Sam had to rush the Paul George trade because of the Kawhi Leonard free agency. And even though he did really well, that's not Sam's way. He's going to slow walk this. This is going to take for an hour later. I'm typing. So everything, and then, you know, the whole thing, the final negotiation on it all happened on the 20-minute Uber ride from the Golden Nugget to Thomas and Mack. And so that's how that last stage, after a lot of talks, lots and lots of talks over those 6 days, but that last conversations, it was 20 minutes in the backseat of an Uber.
Yeah, you get a couple of first-rounders thrown in there and some pick swaps. At 20 minutes, gets foot pretty quick.
Well, that was already done. All that was all about was protection levels and years of the picks and then the pick swaps. Sam wanted the picks to be out, you know, not in the first few years, but towards the end or even after the current James and Russ contracts. That was important to Sam. Daryl needed them to still allow flexibility to trade a pick if he needs to this year or one of the subsequent years by not having them grouped. Well, you can't group them too much, but so the pick swap had to expire with, so in other words, if it doesn't get conveyed, he needed them to expire so that he would have the freedom to trade a first round pick, because you can't owe picks in consecutive years. That was what was happening in that last 20 minute conversation.
My favorite detail that you included in that was that the Uber driver had earbuds in and had, you know, obviously no idea what crazy stuff was going on in the backseat.
He did not care. Now that one, that anecdote came from somebody besides Daryl. It was funny. My two favorite anecdotes were not part of the interview that filled a lot of the story. After the interview, I went pacing around Toyota Center, just calling my wife and saying, okay, this is about what time I'll be home tonight, this is what I have to do. And I always pace, you know, it's kind of always pacing. And so I'm just pacing in a couple of hallways at Toyota Center. Daryl comes down the elevator, so I put her on hold for a second just to say thanks for the interview. And the guy he was with, you know, we made small talk, and he told me that Uber story.
Huh.
And so that one happened. And the other one was the same way. It was Daryl, after the interview, going back upstairs, telling me the James story of, dude, it took me 5 months to trade for you. And so it was like, okay, that's you funny. Do this whole interview. He's very generous with his time. And my two favorite anecdotes weren't in the interview. They came later. One from just the luck of pacing while on the phone. And so, you know, it's funny how things like that sometimes happen. I wish I had time on that story, though, because it would have been nice if I had days and days. But we wanted it, obviously, in the Sunday paper
right.
to try and chase down, like, the Fertittas were out of the country. So I would have liked to have reached the Fertittas and had their perspective on getting calls from Daryl and that kind of thing. But I couldn't reach them. You know, I got, like, a message back, like, 36 hours later or something. I just got cell service. Sorry, I missed your messages. It's like, oh, man. You know, how it goes in our business sometimes.
Right.
Well, I was going to ask you my question, but I don't really care anymore. That was great. That was great storytelling. Mine was going to be something stupid about Patrick Beverley and Russell Westbrook playing each other, and Patrick Beverley used to play for the Rockets. That'll be fun. That's more of a statement than a question. It'll just be fun times. Jonathan, thanks for taking time out for us. Looking forward to the season. Looking forward to seeing you on the beat. And once again, enjoy the downtime because it's about to get crazy again pretty soon.
Yeah, you guys too. It should be a very interesting season. That's all we ever want, right?
Is
keep it interesting. And it will be, I think, in Oklahoma City and Houston.
It's never not interesting. Thanks for joining us, Jonathan. And thanks, everybody, for joining us on the Thunder Buddies podcast. Download, listen, subscribe, share on Apple Podcasts. And we will see you after the schedule releases next week.
On Monday.
On Monday. Sure, why not? Thanks.